Good morning. Now, really, we just got a great example of what all this scripture is about when we watched this choir of children getting ready to start, but there was a little straggler. As a straggler, I totally feel exactly what was happening there. Sometimes you just got to take your time. But you know what? They didn't start without her, did they? If we would just not start without people, and I mean that metaphorically, I know if y'all really didn't start without me sometimes, we would never do anything, but I mean, like, if we just remembered that we don't have to leave people out for us to be let in, that'd just be it. I mean, we'd just be done. But we don't. We don't remember that. We forget it over and over and over again, and so we get to talk about what it means to belong. And that's really what this is as we journey forward from Acts, having just read about this good church fight, now into the book of Galatians, which part of the book of Galatians is recorded in Acts that we read last week in terms of what was going on in the conflict. Of course, because they are academics, they dispute a little bit of the timeline in terms of which part of Acts lines up with which part of Galatians. But the point is this, that we are still dealing with the same thing that they were dealing with back then. I really enjoyed what Bryn read. I'm guessing that was the Message translation, Living Bible. It was certainly easier to understand than what we typically get out of Galatians, which is a lot of the word justification, which is basically, it's become a great piece of ammo for church doctrine and dogma. But instead of justification, I want to talk today about belonging, because it's really, in this sense, the same thing. It's about who belongs. The kids sang a song called Ancient Words. And, you know, if we were really good Baptists, we would talk. I mean, we're the best Baptists, don't get me wrong, okay? Other Baptists are small, we're huge. We're the best Baptists. But, listen, if we were really talking about ancient words, as Baptists, we had a huge fight about those ancient words, about inerrancy and infallibility and all these in words. And anytime you want to fight about a word that starts with not at the beginning, you just shouldn't have that fight. Let's talk about positive words, words that begin with non-negated syllables. We had this fight about the Bible, but the original ancient words that we say are the oldest words are this: it is good. Right? Isn't that how the Bible starts? With God, in one part of Genesis, He speaks life into being. In another part, He forms it with His hands. But every time God does something, the first words we hear from God is God looked at what had happened and said, it is good. And He didn't say, that is good and that is bad. God just said, it is good. And as far as ancient words go, those are the most ancient words in our Judeo-Christian lineage. It is good. And we've spent the rest of our history trying to find a part that's not. One that's always outside of ourselves, right? It is good, and I am good, and you are, okay. Or not okay. But from the beginning, the most ancient claim of the Yahweh, the one that we worship, who we say created life and sent His Son to redeem life and sustains life through the Spirit in us, the most ancient words are, it is good. Well, let's fast forward a little bit, a few thousand years from the it is good, a few millennia maybe, a span of time, and we find ourselves in the book of Galatians arguing about whether or not it actually is good. Paul will write this letter to the church, and he will be honest in it, because this is one of the greatest moments of Paul talking about who he was before. And Jesus got that, by the way. Jesus one time told a story about how you couldn't be a prophet in your hometown. That's because everybody knows your business. And if they don't know your business, then they just hadn't found it out yet. Somebody somewhere knows your business. Jesus said it's hard to be a prophet in your hometown because nobody will let you be who you are becoming. This space, and I don't mean this building, I mean this space that we hold together as a people of God ought to be the space where people are always allowed to be who they are becoming and are never trapped by who they were. Because that is the central claim of our faith after it is good, is that we are good and we can be more than we were by God's grace. So we need to be that space for each other where we can stand up and tell our stories and say, hey, you know, I used to be this way. I used to be kind of a bully. I did. Not physically. I think we all saw that was not a reality. Mentally. Some of y'all met my friend from seminary this week who was in town, Wes. Hopefully he'll be back with us tonight at the Seated Lord's Deacon Supper. There are 12 different ways you can put those four words together, by the way. And I'm trying for all of them. As Wes was in town, I was thinking about it. Here's a real irony. I used to be a bully to people in seminary. That's where we go to learn about Jesus. I yelled at a guy once. He had a martyr complex. Make of that what you will. And he was annoying. I yelled at him in the middle of a class of 30-some-odd students. Why? What did it matter? It was a 90-minute class. And it was about 30 seconds of it that really upset me. I used to be that guy, and I'll be honest, without your help, sometimes I still am. Sometimes I get kind of insecure, and so I get a little mean. But by the grace of God, I don't have to be who I was. But it takes all of us. Because sometimes we need somebody to call us out and be like, you are lying to yourself. It's always where it starts. That's exactly what happens. Paul talks in this letter of Galatians, he talks about, this is who I used to be, but when I met Jesus, this change happened. It's harder for some of us because we don't have this road to Damascus experience where we were maybe riding on a horse or maybe just walking, depending on who's painting us, and suddenly God shows up and we get struck down blind, we can't see, and there's fish scales on our eyes or something like that. Any of y'all had that experience? No, a lot of us, some of us have had dramatic experiences of grace. But of course, some of us have had those dramatic experiences of grace after we'd been walking with Jesus for a while. It wasn't when we started. We started because we grew up in church. And so we heard about this Jesus, and so we just kind of got in on this until one day we just walked along far enough. And then we got struck by grace. and it changes the game. But Paul has this moment where he says, this is who I used to be, and it's not who I am now. And there's this definite difference. And then old Cephas, I'm sure Peter hated it when he called him that. Stop calling me Cephas. Yeah, I realize what it's doing with the language. But anyway, Peter shows up, and Paul calls him out. Paul says, Peter used to eat with the Gentiles until some folks from James came and told him not to do that. And then he stopped and went back to being this legalistic son of a gun. That's actually in the Greek, okay? He went back because he was afraid that maybe he was being too graceful. He got nervous that maybe if there weren't boundaries, he wouldn't be as much of an insider as he used to be. Remember, this is Peter who last week stood up and said, God has appointed me to do this thing. He got nervous, and so he listened to this nagging voice that said, you shouldn't hang out with those people. Yeah, no one's ever heard that before, right? Sometimes let me start that one over. We know from analysis and observation that children do not see the distinctions that adults do until we tell them to see them. Kids will hang out with anybody. And sometimes they're like weirdly, brutally honest. You got a kid who's different, they're not going to pretend like that kid is not different. They're going to say, what's wrong with you? Adults, we just whisper about it. What's wrong with them? We're removed. We don't engage the person. We treat them like an object to be talked about. Kids walk up and make us uncomfortable with their vulnerability by saying, you seem different. You seem different than me, but let's still play, until somewhere somebody says, we don't play with those kind of people. We don't do stuff with them. That's not how Hudsons act. No, fortunately, we all know that that's not ever a good rubric for what we do. We train people to bear our prejudices. And you don't have to be a parent to one to do it. Because they're watching all the time. Paul's had enough of it. He says, Peter, this is ridiculous. Yes, you were born into Judaism. And yes, you used to do this. And then he asks that horrible question, how was that working out for you? Poorly, by the way. It was working out poorly. Because Peter's on his own path of transformation, and there is grace in Paul confronting him and saying, nuh-uh, no. You were raised just like me to be a certain way, and then God showed up, and we are called to be different than that now. And if we are called to be different, and we expect people to let us be different, then we sure as heck ought to not apply some sort of double standard to others. I sometimes feel like double standards are the only ones we have. Paul says, either Jesus does this thing for us, or none of it matters. But if Jesus does this thing for us, and we really all were falling short of this mark, and grace is really big enough for all of us, then it's big enough for all of us. And there's nothing you got to do and no different way you have to be except for letting God take you from where you are and take you to where God wants you to be. But I don't necessarily always get to tell you what that is. I don't get to tell you what you have to do to belong. If you look at the front of your worship guide, does anybody know where that picture, besides Jill, does anybody know where that picture's taken from? Clint Eastwood hung out there once. So did Nicolas Cage, Sean Connery, Alcatraz. Some of the most beautiful gardens in San Francisco, and San Francisco is full of beautiful flowers, are within the walls of Alcatraz. One of the harshest penal system punishments we have ever had in America. I mean, only Clint Eastwood could get out. That ought to tell you something. Well, and Sean Connery, but, you know, he's his own category. I loved it when we were in Alcatraz a few years back. We were taking the tour, and we walked out, and there, in this space where men used to be held because of what they had done, was life bursting forth. This is not a commentary on, well, it probably is a little commentary on some of the things in the justice system, but it is not to say that there are not consequences for actions, but it is to say that sometimes people pay their time and we never let them move on. Whether they wound up in jail or they just wound up in friend jail, where we don't hang out with them anymore. We cannot be the people of God and be that way. Period. If Jesus was enough for us, Jesus is enough for everybody. And our call is to live into our new life and to let people live into theirs. We've got to be the space, the fertile soil. I think Jesus might have talked a little bit about that too. We've got to be that fertile soil where people can be planted and grow. And I don't mean just if they're a member of this church. I love it if they are, but I mean like in our lives. We've got to be the space and the kind of people who create an environment around us where people can grow into who God is calling them to be. All of us have some story about who we used to be. Some of us don't like to talk about it. Some of us like to pretend it's not there, but I'm going to stick with my first statement. All of us have a story about who we used to be. But by the grace of God, we are not that anymore. So let's live into a future full of flowers where imprisonment used to be. Let's be a people who are free to love and to enjoy and to embrace until everyone is free.